All right. I want to ask you this morning to name at least one thing that you find disgusting. One thing. Huh?
Sour cream.
It really makes it hard for me to be your friend because of that, but mushrooms. Wow. Something else that you find disgusting.
Cream cheese.
Tomatoes. Ethan. Huh? Cheese in general. What's wrong with you people? What was that, Glenn?
Boiled okra.
I think we could all say bleh to that. All right, let me ask you this. How many of you like cottage cheese? Raise your hands. All right. How many of you would like cottage cheese if I put ketchup on it? All right, I got one man on my side. I love cottage cheese. Heather buys the big tub of it from Costco. It lasts maybe 5 days, and I'm the only one in my house that eats it. And I like to eat it in a variety of different ways because I'll make a meal out of it. Like, that's my meal. So sometimes I like to take potato chips and crumble up on top. The best is Doritos. Take the original nacho Doritos, crush them up, and put them on. Some people like peaches or pineapple on their cottage cheese. That's all right. I like ketchup, a little salt and pepper. Fantastic. Or the best is ranch dressing. Ranch dressing, cottage cheese, some bacon, croutons, a little bit of cheddar cheese, pepperoni. Oh, it's, my mouth is salivating. Something else that disgusts you. I've noticed all these things are things we put in our mouth, which is going to play into the sermon very well. So, spiders, all right? Don't put them in your mouth, all right? Anything else? Fish guts in a metal dumpster over the summer. That was very specific. So, there was a lady back at the church in North Beckley. She found frogs absolutely disgusting. Or was that St. Clairsville? Maybe it was both. An elder's wife at the church at North Beckley, she loved it when it snowed, all right? But when it rained and you start getting these dark patches, look like holes in the yard, for some reason she had a huge aversion to that. I don't know why. She couldn't explain it, but she found that disgusting. The truth of the matter is we all have something that disgusts us, right? That we have an aversion to. We want to avoid it at all costs, like boiled okra, all right? My goal this morning in my sermon is to cause you to feel disgust. I want you to feel aversion, all right? And I'm going to do that by talking about grace. We're going to talk about grace. Scandalous grace. Because in our story in Matthew chapter 9, Jesus welcomes the very people that society loved to hate. Loved to hate. So let's go back. Abby did a fine job reading the text, but I want to read it again because I want it right before your eyes. So open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 9. We're going to start reading in verse 9. Matthew 9, starting in verse 9. So in this passage, again, we see an encounter. Jesus encounters Matthew. Matthew encounters Jesus. Then there's an encounter with Jesus and the Pharisees. All right, and this is going to tell us something about who Jesus is, and it's going to tell us how we can have a deeper awareness of God and the type of God that he is. All right, so Matthew 9, starting in verse 9. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me," and he got up and followed him. And as he sat at dinner in the house, many tax collectors and sinners came and were sitting with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard this, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have come to call not the righteous, but sinners. So, who is Matthew? All right, let's start there. Well, Matthew is probably the writer of the gospel that we just read. He was a tax collector. Now, in those days, being a tax collector was not just a job. It was a label. A label. A label that you wore. And it was a label of contempt, scorn, condemnation. It meant you were a collaborator, what is wrong with my tongue? With the Roman oppressors, a traitor of your own people, and likely involved in dishonest practices. Tax collectors were notorious for overcharging and pocketing the difference, growing rich off the backs of their own people. They were despised, considered sinners of the worst kind. They were universally hated. Now, imagine the shock when Jesus, this rabbi with a growing reputation and popularity, walks up to Matthew and says, "Follow me." Even more scandalous is that Jesus is willing to sit at a table and have a meal, not only with Matthew, but with other tax collectors and sinners. This is a moment that would go viral on social media, where people will be absolutely shocked. Jesus is sitting with the worst kind of people you can imagine. It would be breaking news on cable news. It would be something that a political candidate would never recover from. It would be so scandalous that it would ruin their campaign. But notice how Jesus responds to Matthew. He doesn't lecture him about his sins. He doesn't demand that he first clean up his life. He simply invites him right there in the midst of his sin into a relationship. Think about that for a moment. Jesus looks at this man who is hated by his own community and sees something that others don't. Jesus sees not someone to be hated, but someone to be loved. Society looked at Matthew and saw someone who was dishonest. Jesus sees someone whose human dignity needed to be honored. Society looked at Matthew and saw somebody who was greedy. Jesus looked at him and saw somebody who needed gratuitous grace. Society looked at Matthew and saw somebody who was unclean. Jesus saw somebody who needed unconditional love. Society looked at him and said, "He is a traitor. He is unpatriotic. He needs to be conquered." Jesus looked at him and saw someone who needed to be partnered with and shown compassion. Jesus sees him not as someone to be avoided, but a future disciple. Jesus' power to see in a person not only what he was, but also what he could be is on display in this passage. No one ever had such faith in the possibilities of human nature as did Jesus. Because the world is looking at Matthew and thinking, there couldn't be a worse candidate to be a follower or a disciple of Jesus. They say nothing of an apostle or someone who would write one of the four gospels. But Matthew wasn't just hated by society. He was also despised by the religious leaders, which brings us to the next question. Who are the Pharisees? Well, the Pharisees were the religious elite of the day. They were committed to the law of Moses. They were the Bible-believing, Bible-toting, Bible-quoting kind of people. For them, their motto was, "The Bible says it, I believe it, and that settles it." They could quote the Bible front and back. They were meticulous about observing every rule and tradition. They saw themselves as the guardians of Israel's purity, keeping the people from moral and spiritual corruption. To the Pharisees, maintaining purity was absolutely everything. They didn't want to come in contact with anything or anyone that would make them unclean. So you had, even amongst the Pharisees, a group of them called the bruised and bleeding Pharisees. You know why they were called the bruised and bleeding Pharisees? Because if they were, for example, in the marketplace, and they saw someone coming towards them that they considered to be unclean, like Matthew or some other sinner, maybe the woman caught in adultery, they would close their eyes so that they wouldn't have to make eye contact with them. That's how much they wanted to keep distance from them. And because they closed their eyes, they didn't stop and stand still. They would continue to walk, and so they would bump into things, fall over things, trip over things, and bruise and cause themselves to bleed. They were the separatists. We have to keep ourselves separate from those who are unclean. Because they believed that Israel's holiness was key to receiving God's favor. And so they went to any length, great lengths, to avoid anything or anyone that might make them unclean. So, when they see Jesus, not just talking to Matthew, but actually reclining at a table with him and other tax collectors, they are outraged. They're outraged. And so they go and they ask Jesus' disciples a question. Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Now, it's important. This question is not about what's on the menu. It's not about what are they eating. No, this isn't a question of curiosity. This is a question of condemnation. Why is Jesus eating with these people? Doesn't he know who they are? Why is Jesus associating, accepting the fellowship of these kinds of people? You see, hospitality in Jesus' day, sitting down and having a meal with someone, in their culture was a show of acceptance. It was to say to that person, you belong with me. There's an old phrase that says, to share a meal is to share a life. So if you sit down with someone in Jesus' day, and you shared a meal with them, you're saying, I accept you. You belong with me. But that's where the Pharisees drew the line. To them, Jesus is crossing a boundary that shouldn't be crossed. They see tax collectors and sinners as unclean. And by eating with them, Jesus risks becoming unclean too. In the minds of the Pharisees, there are certain people you just don't associate with. You're not friends with them, and you certainly do not share a meal with them. Which leads us to our next question. Why do the Pharisees object to Jesus eating with Matthew? Well, it's rooted in their understanding of purity and holiness. They believe that to be holy, one must avoid anything or anyone who was unclean. And in their minds, people like Matthew are the very definition of unclean. Their lives, their choices, their lifestyles, their very presence was a threat to the purity of the Pharisees that they held so dear. So they had this aversion. They wanted to stay clear of them. But there's something deeper at play here. Something that Richard Beck highlights in his book, Unclean. Beck talks about how we have an instinctual reaction to disgust to things that we perceive to be dirty and impure. And this reaction doesn't just apply to physical things, it applies to people too. So let me give you an example. All right? Hold on a second. In order to do this, my mouth can't be dry. So, what would you say if I were to spit in this cup? Would you say? No, it's tobacco. That's a story for another day. Tobacco and a one church cup. Ask me about that story one day. Not pleasant. So, what would you think, now that I've spit in this cup, if I reached in and touched it? Is that disgusting? What if I drink it? Yuck. The spit was just in my mouth, and there was no problem with it. Do me a favor. Intentionally create some saliva in your mouth and swish it around. It's there right now. Is it bothering you? Do you find it disgusting that it's on the inside of your mouth? No. But if I were to come up to you and spit at your feet, or to spit on the pew, or spit on your shirt, you would find that to be disgusting, something that needs to be cleaned up, right? Beck talks about this as a way of illustrating how we view disgust. We find it cringe-worthy. We want it out of sight, all right? Because spit, when it leaves our mouth, suddenly becomes something dirty, something unclean. When it's inside your mouth, you don't think twice about it. But the moment it hits the ground, the moment it's in the cup, all right, it's something that we would rather avoid, something we'd wipe up quickly, and certainly something we wouldn't want to touch. But it's my spit. It came out of my body. So what's so disgusting about it now that it's outside? Told you my job was to disgust you this morning. Beck uses the idea of spit to illustrate a powerful point about disgust. You see, our feelings of disgust are not just about things that are physically dirty. They apply to how we see people. We start to see certain people because of their lifestyle, their past, their actions as something unclean, something to be avoided, much like the spit in the cup. The Pharisees saw Matthew and his friends just like that. They were the spit in the cup of society. Something to be avoided, not touched, not associated with. And that's why they object so strongly to Jesus eating with them. The Pharisees see Matthew and the tax collectors, and they're disgusted. Gross. Jesus sees it differently. Jesus responds to their objections in a way that turns their understanding of purity and grace upside down. So what does grace look like in this passage? Well, grace in this passage looks like Jesus sitting at a table with tax collectors and sinners. It looks like a rabbi reaching out to the very people others recoiled from. Grace is Jesus choosing to be with the unclean and offering them a place at the table. You see, grace is so great that it doesn't demand that people clean up themselves before they come to the table. Grace invites them as they are and trusts that transformation will follow. Our view of most people in the world is that you can believe and then you have to behave and then you can belong to our group. Or maybe we might change the first two up. You have to behave, then you can believe, and then you can belong. But Jesus turns all that around. He says, come and belong. And as you hang out with me, you'll begin to believe. And the more time we spend together, then the Spirit will do His work and will transform you. That's radical grace. That is scandalous grace. Brennan Manning, in his writings, often talks about the scandal of grace, how it is offensive to our sense of fairness and justice. And that grace is not about giving people what they deserve. It's about giving them what they don't deserve. And Jesus shows us that grace is about mercy, not sacrifice. He quotes from Hosea here. He says, go learn what this means. I think we ought to take Jesus seriously. We need to spend some time with this passage, this phrase, and learn what it means. I desire mercy.